When I first arrived here at St. John's as your new rector, I took great delight in getting to know all of the individuals here. I also took great delight in exploring this building as a lover of historic architecture and beautiful buildings. It was wonderful to explore and really pay attention to the windows and other aspects that called out to me. And in those early days, I came across two images that were quite confusing to me. Some of you know these images, but some of you who are newer or are visiting may be unfamiliar with them. The first is an image of a chalice, of a cup. Now, not particularly a confusing image necessarily for Christians. There's one right up there, a symbol for Holy Communion. But this chalice is a little different. For if you look at it closely, you will see that there is a creature coming out of it. A creature that almost looks like a dragon. Now, it's not that one, but it's the chalice that is over your head every time you come in and out of the doors of St. John's. So as you leave today, if you happen to leave by the front doors or as you're walking to coffee hour, take a look at the stained glass over the outer doors. And there's a chalice with this little green-headed monster with a wing coming up out of it. What is that all about? Said I when I first saw it. And then later I learned, and this was helpful, that this beautiful stained glass window that we have high up above the main doors of the tower, that you can only see from about here as you go out, it was installed in commemoration of St. John, our patron saint, and there is an image of St. John standing holding a chalice. And you might have to go up to the balcony actually to see this, but out of that chalice is crawling a serpent, a snake. A chalice with a little dragon? A chalice with a little serpent? What is that all about? So, of course, I went to Google and put in St. John, serpent, chalice, and learned that in the early church there were a variety of legends that grew up around John the Evangelist, particularly stories that were told after the resurrection, and we don't know a lot about this writer of this gospel and where he went and what he did. But one of the legends is that there was a time and place where someone who was opposed to the proclamation of the gospel wanted to kill John, placed some poison in a chalice of wine, and offered it to the evangelist to eat. The evangelist blessed the wine, and as he blessed the wine, the poison was transformed into a snake which slithered away, and the cup became a cup of blessing, of wine to be drunk for sustenance. Now, by the 13th century, a chalice, sometimes with that serpent, had become a familiar symbol for John the Evangelist. So I tell you that in part so if you're ever confused going out these doors, you know why. There's that little green monster. But I also tell you that story because we heard of another chalice today, another cup. The cup of which Jesus speaks in the gospel lesson. He's responding to John and James of Zebedee, the sons of thunder they are sometimes called, and we don't know this, but tradition suggests that this is the John who wrote the gospel of John. They are seeking to be good and faithful disciples, but just like us, part of them wants to see what's in it for themselves if they're going to be walking this path of discipleship. They want places of glory on the right and left of Jesus when he comes to reign in glory. And what Jesus offers instead is not a seat on either side of his throne, but a cup. Are you willing to drink the cup which I will drink? Are you willing to be baptized in the baptism in which I am baptized? And what he offers them instead is a life of service, and indeed a life of sacrifice, a life of giving up a sense of grasping for glory, and instead offering themselves to the world. So I'd like us to consider these two kinds of chalices, because I believe they are ones that are offered to us all of the time in our lives in a variety of ways. Often the world gives to us a chalice which has in some ways been poisoned. And do we have the capacity and the ability to be agents of blessing and transformation for such a chalice? And sometimes we are offered chalices and cups by no one less than Jesus Christ himself when he asks us to engage in a life of service, in an offering of sacrifice that may bring some hardship or challenge to our lives. Do we have the capacity and the ability to take that cup as well? And I believe we do because of a third cup or chalice, one of which we speak of and touch every single week in this Eucharist. And that is the chalice that Christ offers us at this altar. For isn't that, in a sense, the cup which Jesus himself blessed and shared? An example of both those kinds of cups? It was a cup that he was forced to drink, in a sense, the offering of his life, because of the evil of the world, the evil that could not accept his message of God's embracing love for the whole of humanity. And it was also the cup that he accepted from God, in obedience to God, to offer himself as a sign of that embracing love. God gives us the grace and the strength to receive the chalices of the world and to transform them into blessings. I was noticing this week, as I prayed the Lord's Prayer, that immediately after Jesus tells us to ask for our daily bread, give us this day our daily bread, what is the next thing we are asked to do? We ask God to forgive us our trespasses as we forgive others. And I was thinking, what if we heard that prayer today instead as, give us today our daily cup? So would that when someone's anger comes towards us, when someone's poison is addressed to us, we're given the capacity to forgive, the grace and the strength to forgive. And then do you know what comes next? You do, immediately after, forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive others, is lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And when confronted with the evil of the world, do we have the capacity to drink from the cup and respond to it with love and see a serpent leave and replaced by something good and kind and fair? I think, for example, of women and men who today are speaking up about abuse that they received at the hands of others. And indeed, some women and men who as children received that abuse from the very hands of clergy who offered this cup. Aren't they, in their courage to speak the truth, expunging the poison so that that serpent may slither away and be replaced by healing and restoration? Or I think my own experience of a time when I felt I was ready to say to Jesus, I am able, just as John and James said, to give myself, to offer myself. It was when I was in college. Some of you know I've spoken often about a school that I served on an internship in Jersey City, run by a remarkable group of nuns. And I still remember the day my parents drove me down from our lovely suburban home in northern New Jersey. And as we drove into Jersey City and drove into one of the most impoverished neighborhoods of that community where I was going to be dropped off for an entire semester, I still remember saying to myself, what in the world am I doing? And how do I get out of this commitment? Because I was scared. I was frightened. And then I was drawn into the remarkable life that this community of nuns had created in their own life together and in the life of that school. And I discovered that a life of giving, a semester of offering myself, was a great blessing indeed. And I drank gladly from the cup that Jesus Christ offered. My friends, all kinds of cups are offered to us each day. Some are loving cups full of blessings that we can see. But some, frankly, seem to be filled with poisonous spirits. Some are offered to us and we want to take them, but we aren't sure that we are either. May we be reminded as we come to this altar today that Jesus Christ offers us the cup of his blessing, of his sacrifice, of his grace, that we may be able to gladly receive what is offered to us and see then that it will become a blessing for the world.